श्रीला गुरुदेव की जय, श्रीमान महाप्रभु की जय, श्री गिरिराज महाराज की जय, श्री श्री जगन्नाथ बलदेव सुभद्रा की जय, श्री हरिनाम संकीर्तन की जय, श्री एकादशी की जय, ग्रंथराज श्रीमद् भागवतम की जय, श्री ब्रह्म स्तुति की जय, गौर भक्त वृंद की जय, गौर प्रेमानंद गुरु। Okay. So thank you so much. Welcome to all of you, to the ones connected online as well. We are continuing today with our series of lectures on Sri Brahma Stuti, which means the prayers of Brahma, or the prayers of Brahma. So today we will be in analyzing, studying verse 19. It's a little bit too loud. If possible, maybe speaking closer to her or something. So we'll be studying verse 19, which is class 21st, since we have two introductory verses. But as usual, I'll make some brief recap from regarding what we saw yesterday, where in verse 18, Brahma said, "Have you not shown me today that apart from you, all this universe is just the work of Maya? At first you were alone, and then you became all of Vrindavan's cubs and cowherd boys, your friends. Then all of them became four-armed forms, worshipped by everyone, including me. Later, you became exactly that many universes, and now all that remains is the one immeasurable, non-dual Brahman." So, some verses before this, Brahma referred to Yashoda's experience when she was looking into Krishna's mouth and seeing the whole universe, both inside Krishna's mouth and outside Krishna's mouth. So after relating to that vimohan, that particular bewilderment in relation to Yashoda, Brahma is coming back to his own recent vimohan, or bewilderment, just experienced a few minutes before, basically, when Krishna expanded himself as this unlimited number of forms, cowherd boys, cubs, and from them, Narayans coming, and universes coming, and Brahmas coming, and Brahma witnessing all that. And after that, all of that wrapping up, and only Krishna remains. So with all of this, Brahma here is trying to establish, in this and other verses, the inconceivable nature of Krishna's form, which seems normal, which seems limited, which seems human, but as my Guru Maharaj likes to emphasize, Krishna's form is human-like. Srila Prabhupada used that experience, human-like pastimes. So it's human, but it's like human. There is something that is way beyond our experience as humans. So it seems human, and it has an ingredient of humanity, but it's, in his own words, we will call divine humanism. So there is an element of humanity, but there is a good element of divinity as well, of transcendence. So here, Brahma tries to make this point by referring to Krishna as Brahman, which one idea of Brahma Dwayam, non-dual absolute, like implying from your single form so many forms came, you expanded in that variety, and eventually all those forms returned to you. So there's so much variety, but actually all of them are non-divisible. It's not possible to separate it. All of them are you, actually. You are all pervasive. Brahma just had direct experience of that. He witnessed, he saw with his eyes the nature of Krishna's all-pervasive form. Middle size, all-pervasive, at the same time. At the same time, he's mentioning here that outside of you, everything is Maya. And when he says you, he's referring you plus your abode, Vrindavan, your associates, calves, friends. Outside of all of that, what remains is Maya Shakti. Or in other words, if you see reality without seeing you, and your internal energy, whatever you are seeing, without seeing Krishna, that's the result of Maya Shakti. That's the influence of illusory energy. To see reality without its center, without the real center, basically. So in this way, Brahma is speaking here about Maya Shakti, Swarup Shakti, the associates of Bhagavan, Krishna himself, all these different Shaktimam and Shakti, the energetic source and the energies. And in this way, like, I'm folding the equation called Achintya Bheda Bheda, which is the metaphysics of our school, which is there's oneness and difference at the same time between God and everything else. Everything is God. In one sense, we agree with that. We are not that much totally in disagreement with the impersonalists. Everything is God, yes, but in which sense? In the sense that nothing exists separated from him, disconnected. Everything is him and his energies, which are one and different from him. So in that sense, we of course differ from Advaita Vedanta. So Brahma is realizing this. He's seeing Krishna, and he's referring to Krishna as Brahman. You are the absolute non-dual, but actually you are the real Brahman. You are the supreme Brahman. Because Brahman, as we generally know, is static, non-differentiated, without qualities, without movement, without form, without love, without lila. It may sound relatively boring for a bhakta, at least. But here, Brahma is implying you are way beyond that notion of Brahman. You are Brahman in every sense of the term. You are the great. Brahma means the great, all-pervasive. While at the same time, you appear localized in this world. This is inconceivable for our three-dimensional mind, but totally possible for someone like Krishna. Try to remember this over and over again. What is impossible for us, it's totally possible for him. That's the meaning that he has Achintya Shakti, which means he has some potencies which make the impossible possible. Impossible, yes, for us. But that doesn't mean that it has to be impossible for everyone else, especially for Krishna. So anyhow, today, in today's verse, that was a recap from yesterday's verse. Today, Brahma will continue analyzing his experience of what we may call sacred wonder in connection to Krishna's form. And we should try to spend necessary time in going through that as much as we can. Because it's a very important topic that we need to have in place if we really actually want to attain the goal that Brahma somehow personified. He's a sadhaka aspiring for Siddha, for a type of perfection in Vrindavan. So for that to happen, some things need to be in place first as foundation of the project or of the temple we want to construct in our heart, in the words of my Guru Maharaj. So let's connect this verse that we just analyzed with today's verse before going to the verse itself. And Jiva Goswami makes some bridge between one and the other, because all these verses have some thread, some continuity in them. It's not just like isolated statements in one direction or another, but there is some theme, if you will, going through and developing. So in his Bhagavad Sandarbha, Anucheda 37, Srila Jiva Goswami, remember in the previous verse, Brahma referred to Krishna as non-dual absolute, Brahmadvaya. So Krishna then asks, in reply to such a statement, according to Jiva Goswami, Krishna will ask, Brahma, Vishnu and Maheshwar, Shiva, are said to be the cause behind creation, maintenance and dissolution, respectively. And other avatars appear during the maintenance period as well. During the worlds exist, if you will, different divine descents are there. Why do you say that I am the only cause behind these three states? So that's the hypothetical question of Krishna in between verse and verse. So Brahma will reply, of course, to that in this verse. In other words, you just stated that I am the absolute, the cause of all causes, even of God himself. But we know that Brahma, Vishnu and Shiva are the cause behind creation and things. So why you are ascribing all that responsibility to me? Again, Krishna will say, I am looking for my friends and calves in his Brajava. So as we mentioned, Brahma at this stage of his devotional trajectory, he's realizing more and more. Krishna is the supreme, not only the supreme, it's the source of Narayan. As he said, this is very one of the main statements he shared in the previous verses. So he's kind of elaborating on that through all these verses. Krishna is the source. He already said Krishna is the source of the Purusha avatars. He will start to speak how Krishna is the source of the Lila avatar, Guna avatar, Krishna is the source of Narayan. So Brahma is realizing Krishna is the source, is higher than Narayan in terms of Aishwarya, as we say, and also in terms of Madhurya. Krishna is higher than Narayan in terms of majesty. You receive unlimited Narayans coming from one Krishna. So Aishwarya consideration, Krishna is way above Narayan. And in terms of Madhurya, the intimacy that Krishna is affording, there's no comparison between how close you can get to Krishna and how close you can get to Narayan. So in terms of both Aishwarya or majesty and Madhurya or intimacy, Brahma is realizing, in the words of Srila Prabhupada, Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Krishna is too, Bhagavan. So yeah. And Krishna, by all these questions that he's asking in between the verses, like he himself being in the mood of, why are you saying all the things to me? This is not for me. He's preparing also Brahma more and more, if you will. Indirectly, all the Krishna is absorbed in Brajabhav. Indirectly, that has the result in Brahman. He's being prepared more and more for, how do you say in English? He's kind of this morphine. Morphing, like...
Metamorphosis?
Sorry?
Metamorphosis?
No, morphing? Yeah, transforming, if you will. Changing. No, from who he was, Brahma, as to his Gopa project. No? He wants to be a friend of Krishna in the cow sheds. So some transformation needs to be in place in between that. No? From the architect of the universe to a cowherd boy. No? So Krishna is gradually preparing the heart of Brahma with these replies in between the verses. So Brahma is, through all these prayers, Brahma is being transformed, and he himself is like making sense of what's taking place while praying. After each verse, he's realizing who actually Krishna is in terms of Aishwarya and Madhurya, and putting all the things in place and finding philosophical backing to what the attraction he's feeling towards Krishna as a friend. He feels that attraction, but also he's thinking, is this correct? Is this okay? Because at the same time, he's shocked by the level of Aishwarya he had just seen. He realizes, this boy is not ordinary, and I just committed such an offense to such an extraordinary person. But in the context of that, I am attracted to him as a friend. Is this okay? Because he's such a person. So the Aishwarya and the Madhurya components are gradually like falling into their respective places to allow the proper foundations so Brahma eventually can attain that ultimate goal. And with all this, the point is this Brahma stuti and how Krishna interacts with Brahma, showing us how much it is required that all these ingredients are in place to actually enter into Vrindavan. It's not just, I like to go to Vrindavan, so Krishna has to appear at the end of my life and send me there. I mean, he can do whatever he likes, but but generally we have to do our part. And part of our part is to try to make sense of the things and put these pieces together in the best possible way, like Brahma himself is doing. And we are connected to the Brahma Sampradaya, so we have to take his example seriously. So anyhow, in replies to that, a possible reply of Krishna, Brahma will reply to him in today's verse, which is verse 19. We are getting close to the first half of the whole prayers. Tomorrow we will have our last meeting on Brahma Stuti will be verse 20. And there are 40 verses, so we'll reach half of it. So the verse is here. So I will share it also in Sanskrit here. So I'll recite it first, and if you, and then we can go line by line, each of us. I'll recite line by line, and you can join me. Ajanatam tvat padavinan atmani atmatma bhashi vidatya no atmatmana bhashi vidatyamayam srishta vibaham jagato vidhana ivatvameshanta ivatrinetra. So the meter is upajati, but the first line has a little irregular composition. Sometimes that happens in certain lines, a little bit longer. So you will find there's a little thing to adjust there. So I'll recite line by line, and you can also repeat after me. Ajanatam tvat padavinan atmani.
Ajanatam tvat padavinan atmani.
Atmatmana bhasi vitatyamayam.
Atmatmana bhasi vitatyamayam.
Srishta vibaham jagato vidhana.
Srishta vibaham jagato vidhana.
Ivatvameshonta ivatrinetra.
Ivatvameshonta ivatrinetra.
So, translation says, Brahma is speaking to Krishna in reply, "You are the Supreme Self. To those unaware of your actual position, you yourself expand your Maya and appear within inert matter as me, Brahma, for the creation of the universe, as yourself, Vishnu, for its maintenance, and as three-eyed Shiva to bring about its end." So this is today's verse, where Brahma is saying, in reply to the possible reply that Krishna shared before, he's connecting Krishna actually to the functions of Brahma, Vishnu, and Shiva, and trying to make the point, you are actually appearing through all of them to perform those functions. So today we will try to explain how this takes place. But let's begin as usual, going through the word by word. So you can follow the Sanskrit for a minute. So ajanatam, the first word, means to those who are in ignorance. To those like om agyana, ajanatam. No? To those who do not have, are not possessed of knowledge. Tvat padavim can mean, I mean, all these words, as we will see, can mean many things, but I'm sharing now like the general, official, literal meaning of it, of them. The Goswami will start to play with the Sanskrit in so many ways that takes us to another dimension, but the general meaning of each word is what I'm sharing now. Tvat padavin means of your position. So ajanatam tvat padavin means to those unaware of your position, to those who do not know who you actually are. Like Brahma implying, like I was 5 minutes ago. Anatmani means immaterial nature, referring to inert matter. In Sanskrit was like that, because anatmani means not the soul. Atma means atma, and anatma means not the soul. So not the soul means inert matter. So inert matter in this case will refer to material nature. Atma, again, the word atma will appear many times now. Atma means yourself, second line. Atmana, by yourself. Bhasi means appear, in this case you appear. Vitatya means after expanding. Mayam refers to Krishna's Maya, in this case Mahamaya, your Mahamaya in this case means. Then the third line, Shristav. So Shristav refers to creation, like Shristi, Shristi Lila. So in regarding to creation, Iva, aham. Iva means as if, aham means I. So Brahma is speaking here. So regards to creation, I am the one in connection to that, the architect as we know. Jagataha means the universe. Vidhane means in regards to maintenance, comes now the next line, last line, Iva, as if, and then Brahma says, Tvamisa. Tvamisa means yourself. So he doesn't say Vishnu directly, but he's saying yourself, like connecting Krishna directly to Vishnu. Well, he will mention Brahma and Shiva by name. We will explain why. And then Anti, which comes there abbreviated, Anta. Anti means in regards to the end, not like Antya, Lila, Anta, Vedanta. Anti means the end, the annihilation, you say? Dissolution?
Annihilation.
Iva, as if, and Trinetra. So who is Trinetra?
Shiva,
very good. The one of three eyes, with three eyes. Netra means eye. So one, two, third eye, as we know. So he's connected to the principle of dissolution. So well, let's begin as usual with my Guru Maharaj's commentary on this verse that he will be sharing very soon, or we hope very soon, in his forthcoming book. So he says the following. In four verses, from this one till verse 22, Brahma states that Gopal Krishna, standing before him in Gopa Vesh, which means dressed as a cowherd, is the root of both the Guna and the Lila avatars. In this verse, he will refer mostly to the Guna avatars, which means the avatars connected to the Guna, Sattva, Rajas, Tamas, Brahma, Vishnu, Shiva. Sattva, Rajas, Tamas, Vishnu, Brahma, Shiva, correspondent. But Lila avatars also, that will be next verse tomorrow. He is the source of the creation, its maintenance, and its destruction. And here my Guru Maharaj quotes the famous first line of the Bhagavatam and the Vedanta Sutra, Janmadiyasya Jataha. We will explain that as well. But basically means he is the source of that. Creation and so on. And at the same time, he appears within the manifest world in countless forms, in different avatars, as an act of grace. Sat anugrahaya. That will coming in the next verse. I'm including this last part, which actually is connected to the next verse, to make sense of the full sentence. So this verse mostly will speak about Guna avatar. Next verse will speak about Lila avatar. So, to begin with, basically what Brahma is saying here is that, how to say, is that only ignorant people do not know that actually the Lord himself is the one who appears to perform the different functions of creation, maintenance, and dissolution. Again, we will explain throughout the class today how this takes place. Because we may think, no, but actually Brahma, Vishnu, and Shiva are doing that. So in which sense you mean Krishna is doing that and not them? So we will try to explain how they are doing that, but he is, if you will, behind the curtains allowing that to happen. And something interesting here is that Brahma is saying, those who do not know you, he refers to the first word, ajanatam, they think this and this and that. They do not know you. Tvat padavim also, we say it means your position, but padavim also can mean your path. In the Amarakosh, which is one of the in Sanskrit dictionaries, the word padavi can mean position, but also can mean path. So in other words, he means only those who follow your path know you. And which is your path, or the path by which you are known? Bhakti. So in this verse, Brahma basically saying, is indirectly praising Bhakti. He already praised Bhakti a lot in the first verses of the Brahma Stuti, the very beginning. Very beautiful, very, very nice, important verses. But here, indirectly, he's praising Bhakti as this is the only path through which you can be known as who you are. As it is. Bhagavad Gita as it is. Krishna as it is. As he is. So, in this way, Tvat Padavim can also mean your path, or the path that you yourself mostly recommend, the path through which you are known personally. And that's Bhakti. And Krishna says that over and over again in Shastra, no? Bhakti-aham-ikkaya-agrahya, and many other verses, which say, I'm only known by bhakti. Because other processes are basically not interested in me, in knowing me, are interested in getting things from me, or getting blessing from me to get rid of things, but not so much in who I am and how to love me. So that's a path about who I actually am. So that's bhakti. So again, indirectly, Brahma is praising bhakti here. In every verse, if we have the eyes to see, he will be praising bhakti, directly or indirectly. These two statements are always present in Shastra. Something is said directly, something is said indirectly. So we understand every possible side of the equation. Like, I don't know, smartavyasatatam vishnur vishmartavyanajatu chit. That's one example. Always remember Vishnu. The second line say, never forget Vishnu. And you may say, I mean, if you always remember Vishnu, you will never forget Vishnu. What was the need of the second line? Well, you may need the second line just in case. You may not be able to fully play out the implications of the first line. So just in case we say the second one. Or anukulyasa sankalpa pratikulyasa varjanam. Accept everything that is favorable to bhakti and reject everything that is unfavorable to bhakti. See, the first line is enough for that, not for everyone. So in many ways also indirect speech, of course, has other purposes as well. And Krishna says, Paroksha mama chapriyam. I really like indirect speech, he says. When things are not said straight into your face, mood, but in a way that you have to read between the lines and exercise properly what's going on here. So, let's go to some of the ancient commentaries of the Bhagavatam, beginning with Sridhar Swami. As usual, we pay first our respects and pranam to Sridhar Swami, famous commentator with his Bhavartha Dipika, that Mahaprabhu and the Goswamis refer to so much. So, he says like this. He's paraphrasing Brahma. To those who don't know your identity, you are the soul located in Prakriti, and spread Maya by yourself independently. How, one may ask, as if you are I, Brahma, in the matter of creation of the world, as if you are the well-known one, Vishnu, you, in the matter of regulation and protection, and as if you are the three-eyed one, in the matter of destruction. In other words, the implication of this explanation by Sridhar Swami is, those who do not know you means those who see things in dualistic terms and who see, okay, Brahma is creating, but they are not able to see Krishna allowing Brahma to create, facilitating Brahma's function of creation. I mean, if you take Krishna out of the equation, Brahma can do nothing. Brahma doesn't have a clue what's going on, even in the sitting in the lotus, what to speak of receiving guidance, to engage in the design of the universes, being provided with the ingredients for that and so many other things, being empowered from Bhagavan himself, as we say today. Sometimes nobody's there to be Brahma, so Bhagavan himself is doing that. So in that sense, even more directly, you can say Bhagavan himself is doing this, is Brahma, literally. But even if you want to take, okay, Brahma is a jiva, nonetheless, it's important to see Bhagavan is behind that. Behind Brahma, behind Mahadev, and behind Vishnu, although Vishnu is directly related to him, of course. In other words, for those who contemplate the situation with a dualistic mind, they will see, oh, Brahma, Vishnu, and Shiva are doing all stuff, and they are totally disconnected from Krishna. Brahma is realizing, no, it's not like that. You are the cause of everything. Remember, Brahma has just realized how Krishna is the source of everything. So he's totally engrossed in that recent vision and realization where everything is tied to Krishna as its roots. So he's so unlimited Narayan. What to speak of himself as Brahma, Shiva, everyone else, everything has Bhagavan, Krishna, as the root. So this is like the Abheda side of the equation. You have Veda, Abheda. Abheda means non-difference, and Veda means difference. So Abheda means there is non-difference in the sense that everything is connected with Krishna. Everything is one with Krishna. In the sense you cannot separate Him as the source of everything, from everything. As we hear sometimes, He's the cause of all causes. Sarva karana karanam. Or as we, I think, quoted yesterday in the Gita, Aham sarvasya prabhavo. He says, Mata sarvam pravartate. Iti matha vajante mam buddha bhava samambita. I'm the source of everything. And what's everything? Everything. Everything means everything. Everything, He's the source. Not because something starts to exist at some point in time. Again, we are not promoting gratio ex nihilo, creation from nothing to something. But everything has as their source Krishna. It doesn't mean that you started to exist at some point. It means that you are eternal, but your eternal source is Krishna. Yeah, you are eternal, but you have an eternal source. And everything has an eternal source. And the eternal source of everything is exactly the same. So again, we are speaking about this here now, and we are trying to use our head and hopefully heart as exercise as much as possible to understand the things. But Brahma just saw this some minutes ago in a clear way, in the form of revelation. So He cannot but continue expressing these same truths from so many angles. For example, the Shruti says this, for example, that everything is Narayan. Again, Brahma sometimes will concentrate on the Veda side, sometimes on the Abheda side. Difference and non-difference. The two of them are equally important. So the Shruti says, Sarva Narayana Iva Bhavati, which means all that exists is Narayan. Again, we are not promoting impersonalism, but we are just saying there's nothing that exists without the connection with Narayan, without Narayan as its source. Narayan, Krishna, no problem. For us, everything, all these names are names of Krishna, first of all. In other words, if you do not recognize everything as an energy of Krishna, and in that sense recognize Krishna present there, then you have the problem of independent ego. Independence, what we spoke, I think, today in the morning, of false ego, false sense of identity. Not to demonize anyone, just you develop a false sense of who you are, because that means you are not acknowledging the presence of God, basically, as the source of everything. And you become bound by the gunas. That's how the system works. For you to understand that, okay, you cannot understand that there is a supreme ruler. Okay, you live independently, you will be ruled by the gunas. So you start to realize that you are being ruled on some level. And then gradually you start to realize, oh, there is a source to all this. So here Brahma is concluding this side of the equation. Everything is the existence of Bhagavan. Everything is the energy of Krishna. Whether Maya Shakti, Swarup Shakti, Miya Statasta Shakti, everything is Krishna in that sense. And He's the cause of everything. And we heard this so many times, so many years, but another thing is to see that. To see the concept alive, playing itself out in front of your eyes and unfolding in so many layers that Brahma saw a few minutes ago. He's still totally transformed and moved. He's experiencing a conversion in one verse after another. So everything is you, the idea is, and whatever appears to be independent from you, that's due to the influence of Maya. Basically, that's how you can define Maya. Maya means that which seems to be, but which is not. No? It seems real, but it's not. No? Like the famous example of the mirage in the desert. And you think it is there, it's not there. It seems real. I mean, you're running after that. You're jumping over the coconuts, as the movies depict sometimes. No coconuts, sorry. Not there. So, but you see it. And you say, but I saw it. which lens? Guna lens, sattva-rajas. Take off the lens. No more coconut. Or something else. So that's the idea, no? Whenever we feel that something is independent of Krishna, that's a symptom Maya Shakti is having its influence on us. That's an easy way to prove, to test. Is the influence, the symptoms of being influenced by Maya Shakti. Just you see reality independent of Krishna. Something is not connected with him. And generally, when it's independent of Krishna, you try to fit the center in that particular situation. If in that moment you don't see Krishna in the center, probably it's because you are having some hope that maybe I can be the center here. This. In other words, it's Maya Shakti, or we fall under the influence of Maya Shakti due to lack of what we call Sambandha, Sambandha Gyan. Sambandha means, interestingly, Sambandha. So Bandha means like tied or linked, connected. And Sam means everything. So Sambandha means all tied, all connected. So Sambandha Gyan, Gyan means knowledge. Sambandha means the knowledge that shows you how everything is connected with Krishna as its source, at its center. And Abhideya, or the practice, means the resultant action that comes after receiving such an education. You follow? If you understand everything is connected with Krishna, everything has Krishna as its center, then you are supposed to behave in a way that represents that conclusion. And that's what we call bhakti, basically. Bhakti means I live my life with Krishna in the center. And that's what's so important, to have proper Sambandha Gyan. Because if you don't have proper Sambandha Gyan, you have not yet fully understood how Krishna is the source of everything, always, in every situation. And the more you lack that, the more you fail in the application of that in your practice, and you still will see so many times something else in the center. Generally us. So that's when we need to really have a very strong foundation of Sambandha Gyan. That's basically what the guru and teaches the disciple. He/she will refer to Shastra and give proper Sambandha Gyan, and the disciple will receive that with the proper attitude and then conduct himself, herself, in his/her life on the basis of that knowledge. At least in theory, maybe you don't have the vision that Brahma had yet, but you receive the information. This is how reality works. So you try to live as if that's true, basically. I mean, that's true, and you have some faith in the person who gave you that knowledge. So you make the experiment. Okay, let's live life as if Krishna is in the center. And in time you realize it's not as if, he is the center. No? Mm-hmm. But still in the beginning, I'm maybe not fully convinced, I don't have full vision, but the more you apply that, the more prayojan comes, the more a fruit is coming that confirms, yes, you are aligned with reality now. And you are transcending Maya, basically. That means to transcend Maya Shakti, you need Sambandha Gyan, because, again, Maya Shakti means I see reality without its connection with Krishna. Sambandha Gyan means the knowledge that shows me how everything is connected with Krishna. So if you want to transcend Maya Shakti, basically means receive Sambandha Gyan and apply the Sambandha Gyan, and in time, eventually, be patient, of course, the fruit will be that we will act in such a way that Maya Shakti is no longer operative in your life. It's clear what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. I don't want to torture with new words or concepts, but I think I'm trying to make it as simple as possible. So, of course, many, many, many parts in the scriptures refer to this type of uneducated people. For example, in the Gita, Krishna says, abhajananti, similar to ajanatam, abhajananti mammuda manusimtam amashritam, and so on. Param bhavam ajananto mamabhuta. Param bhavam ajananto, he says, right? Ajanatam Mama Bhuta Maheshwara. So he says a similar thing. Those who are, he uses, of course, some strong words, us like Muda, like fool means, like a fool. You, I don't know if in Bulgaria you say that, but if someone is a fool, say, you are like an ass. Yeah. No, they put some, they have like a hat sometimes, they give, well, anyhow. But the point is that those who lack knowledge, that's the idea, do not see me as I am, basically, Krishna is saying to Arjuna there. I am the source of everything, I'm the supreme controller, but they take me as an ordinary person. So they do not, they cannot grasp who I am. And Krishna is saying that while on earth, and having experience of people seeing him, quote-unquote, but not seeing him. No. As we say, Duryodhana or others, they saw Krishna so many times. But they never saw Krishna as he is, as Arjuna did. No. Because they didn't have the prema netra, the eye of love, the premanjana charita bhakti vilochanena. They didn't have the salve of devotion tinged, you say, in their eyes. Somehow this relates here. Let's continue with Sanatana Goswami's commentary. We have some way to go yet. Sanatana Goswami says, for non-devotees who do not know your glories, Brahma is speaking to Krishna through Sanatana Prabhu, for non-devotees who do not know your glories, you manifest in another way. Like in another way means like, different from the way Brahma is seeing Krishna now. Krishna manifests to Brahma in a very unique way. Brahma is a devotee. For persons ignorant of the truth about you or about bhakti, you seem to appear in a material body and become manifest in the form of a soul. For some people, you are one more here in the world. Someone may ask in this regard, but do not they know that there is a big difference between the jiva and God, as explained in the Shrutis and Smritis? No? Do not that people realize that Krishna is actually not one more soul? And Brahma replies in this verse saying, Vitatya Mayam. Vitatya Maya, which means by spreading Maya. In other words, no, such people are bewildered by your Maya Shakti because they are not devotees. Because of not choosing bhakti, because of choosing to remain independent, if you will, through their own self-centered view of reality, they necessarily have to remain under the durashraya, or false shelter, of Maya Shakti. So they will receive a corresponding cosmovision of things. And Krishna will be one more ordinary guy. And Bhagavatam is full of those. Cases, people trying to kill Krishna, seeing him as ordinary. I mean, Brahma saw Krishna as ordinary a few minutes ago. No, from another side, we won't say he was an asura or anything like that, but he had some misreading of who Krishna was for a moment. Sanatana Goswami then says, although, concludes, for the purpose of creation, spreading Maya, you appear as Mahatattva, all the material ingredients in their original form, and other elements, and you accept the positions of Brahma, etc., as we mentioned, it's possible. But in truth, you are the real creator, maintainer, and destroyer, as is pointed out in the first verse of the Bhagavatam, again, which says, Janmadiyasya Jataha. And ends up saying, Satyam Param Dimahi, which means, we meditate on him from whom creation, maintenance, and dissolution in the universe occur. No? The first verse of the Bhagavatam puts that in context. The very first words of the Bhagavatam. Janma diyasya ayata. Janma means birth. Janma adi. Adi means like etc. So it means creation, birth, creation, maintenance, dissolution. All come from this supreme truth that the Bhagavatam is about. So yeah, there are some people in certain posts officially performing certain functions, but you are the one in the back of the whole thing. One second. Okay, let's continue with Srila Jiva Goswami. Do you have pran to life air to continue? Okay. Jiva Goswami says, paraphrasing Brahma as usual, most of the commentators will start speaking as, like implying this is what Brahma is meaning in the verse. So, you yourself appear, Brahma is saying to Krishna, in this world by expanding Maya for protecting you, for protection, sorry, you appear as he, Vishnu, as if limited to the duty of protection. You know, like only, how is it in English, circumscribed to just doing that, although Vishnu is way beyond this world. The name of Vishnu is not mentioned separately like the names of Brahma and Shiva, because Vishnu is none different from Krishna. So generally speaking, Brahma, as we mentioned, is a Jiva, not Shiva, but Jiva, like Tatastha, Shakti. So in that sense, Krishna is not Brahma. Although, as we say, when there is no qualified Jiva to engage, occupy that post, Bhagavan himself will enter there. But Vishnu, as we say, is non-different from Krishna in tattva. No? Metaphysics, they are the same, although, as we already mentioned, Krishna is the source of Vishnu. But they are non-different. They are the same personality in different degrees of expression. And Shiva, well, that's a whole separate conversation. I'm saying that someone here sent a message, if I can explain Shiva tattva, and the reply is no. I mean, we could, but that will take another series of lectures. So we have given some previous seminars on the topic, so eventually you can send me some private messages and I can relate you to there. Because Shiva tattva is more complex. You have Jiva tattva, you have Vishnu tattva, and you have Shiva tattva, which is a little bit in between all the things. There are many possibilities, not easy to understand so quickly. So that may take some time to explain and unfold. So I would prefer to save that for another moment. So the point here is, regarding Brahma and Shiva, Brahma is using the names Brahma, Shiva. But regarding Vishnu, he's telling Krishna, you do that. Because, like implying this proximity, if you will, in identity between Brahma, Krishna and Vishnu, non-difference, basically. And Jiva Goswami then quotes a verse from the Bhagavatam, when Brahma himself, in the second canto, 6th chapter, verses 31-32, Brahma confirms this. So the verse says, the universe is located in Narayan. Although he has no contact with the gunas, at the outset of creation, he takes those powerful gunas of Maya. I create under his order, Brahma is speaking. And Shiva destroys under his order. So again, all this happens under his order, in his service. Holding his three energies, he protects the universe as the Paramatma. So we know Paramatma has mostly to do with supervising?
Overlooking.
Overlooking the material, the Srishti Lila, basically. Paramatma has to do with the Srishti Lila, the interaction between Maya Shakti and Tatastha Shakti under the influence of Maya Shakti. Paramatma is the presiding deity, if you will, of that department. So the idea that Jiva Goswami is making this here, like or through Brahma, or Brahma through Jiva Goswami, as you like, is like, you are Vishnu, but not me, Brahma, nor Shiva is you. No. Vishnu is you. You are Vishnu. You carry out the works of creation and destruction through us too, Brahma, Shiva. Jiva Goswami says, you carry the works of creation and destruction through us too, in your forms of the inner souls in our two bodies. So like implying, I'm Brahma and I'm doing creation, but actually you are in my heart guiding me to engage in creation. So you are doing that. I'm just instrumental. And the same principle applies to Mahadev in terms of dissolution. So that's another way of saying you are doing that, actually, not us. We are not a separate doer, separate creator, and so on. And another interesting interpretation of the word to you, twat, Jiva Goswami says that the subject you should not be taken to mean the preserver Vishnu. It's another way of understanding. One idea is when Brahma is saying to Krishna, you do the creation, he's indicating between Vishnu and Krishna there's no difference. But at the same time there is difference, as we know. There is no difference and there is difference. In terms of tattva, they are the same. In terms of bhava, they're not the same. Vishnu and Krishna, they're worlds apart. So now comes the difference between Krishna and Vishnu. So Jiva Goswami said that the word Iva, which appears interestingly later in the third line, sometimes in Sanskrit you have this, that one word appears in the third line, but you can connect that with the word in the first line. There's place for that in Sanskrit. It's not that only the words next to each other are qualifying each other. You can explain something with the last word and the first one. And of course, you can imagine the Goswamis are doing magic through all this. Now, very interesting interpretations. So, the word Iva means us, no, in English. Not us with you, but with A, like as if. No? So, the word Iva, immediately should precede Tuam, basically. So, why should that not be translated, Jiva Goswami says, as appearing as you in order to maintain the universe? So he says, the subject you has to be read with the word bhasi, second line, with which it agrees. As a result, even though the two words are far apart in the verse, the word Eva should be read with the word Esa, which appears in the third line, fourth line, which means this one, referring to the Vishnu form that has been mentioned several times in these verses. In other words, Jiva Goswami concludes, just to make it, to go to the point. This Vishnu that Brahma is referring in the verse, who maintains the universe, is clearly distinct from Swayam Bhagavan Krishna, to whom Brahma is speaking. So Brahma is speaking to Swayam Bhagavan Krishna, and he's making the case. Vishnu and Krishna are also not the same. If Eva was in connection with you, the word you, that will convey the inappropriate idea that Krishna personally maintains the universe. So that's the point that Jiva Goswami wants to make. Vishnu is not different from you, in one sense, but at the same time there is difference because you, Krishna, you are not engaged in maintaining the universe personally, directly. Directly you are having picnic with your friends and absorbed in Lila and Vrindavan. You are not concerned with cosmic administration. That's not Krishna. That's Vishnu. So in that sense, there is a difference between Krishna and Vishnu, which again speaks about who Krishna is actually and how he is, in the words of our acharyas, Lila Purushottam, which means the Supreme Person absorbed in game, in divine play. That's Krishna's job, if we will, to play, as we were speaking the other day regarding, who was, Richard or Ronald?
Ronald.
Ronald Nixon, one devotee, that when he was looking for God, as well, long story short, he went to India looking for God, and he thought, well, here I will find it. I received so many nice reputation for many people in India. There are these mystics that have realized God in very detailed way. So he arrives to India and he finds himself, I'm more lost than before, because he finds Brahma, Vishnu, Shiva, Saraswati, Ganesh, Krishna, Vishnu, Rama, Chandra, Dasavatara. The pantheon never ends. So he thought, I came looking for God and I'm like, totally lost about what to do. And he intuitively, somehow, some scars from previous lives or something, who knows, he started to analyze each one of these different depictions of divinity, and he looked at them and started to look what they were doing. And he saw Brahma is creating, Vishnu is maintaining, Shiva is destroying, and everyone has something to do. Everyone has some duty to perform, have some job to do, something to attain. And when he reached Krishna, he realized he's doing nothing. He has nothing to do. He's just playing. And he concluded, this is God. He had this type of epiphany, revelation. This is God. The ultimate face of divinity has nothing to do. He's totally self-satisfied and celebrating his own fullness. Celebrating existence, playing the flute and dancing and singing. Nothing. That's his job, to celebrate. Try to imagine. You go to the office, so what's my job, boss? Just to celebrate. And you're like, what? And you will be paying to me for doing that? Of course, that won't happen because we are not Krishna. So don't be naive and expect your boss to pay you for celebrating life. But somehow we are, by connecting with he who is celebrating life, whose job is celebration, we can also inherit, if you will, that type of life, if you will. We can lead a life of celebration and be maintained while celebrating, if you will. Krishna himself is maintaining us and inviting us to celebration. So that's an interesting point that Jiva Goswami wants to make here. Yeah, Vishnu is Krishna, but it's not Krishna at the same time. Vishnu has some level of duty and things to do. Krishna is absorbed in Leela, in play. Vishnu is Krishna, but it's not Krishna in that sense. Okay, let's conclude with Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur's commentary, his Sarartha Darshani. He will, as usual, paraphrase Brahma. So he says, Brahma prayed the following way. Not understanding anything about your transcendental position, the impersonalists think that you are simply material. So now comes the thunderbolt for the followers of Advaita Vedanta. No, because that's their conclusion. Followers of Advaita Vedanta will think, only Brahman is real, everything else is Maya. Everything else, apart from Brahman, even the form of Krishna, is not real. It's not permanent. Only Brahman remains. That's their philosophy, basically. So, of course, they fall into this category here, according to Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. Those ajanatam, or those full personalities that Brahma is referring here to, refer in this case to followers of Advaita Vedanta that consider the form of Krishna as illusory. Persons who think themselves learned but are ignorant of the path of bhakti say that you disperse yourself in the material energy by your own will, and though without form, you appear with a form in the material world. So again, this is criticizing the impersonalists. You have no form, actually, but Brahman appears with a form in this world. That's their idea when you ask someone who follows Advaita Vedanta, so what's Krishna? He's Saguna Brahman. He's Brahman with material qualities, adopting some features of this world. But that's illusory, that's not permanent. Ultimately, the only form that form, no form, what remains is Brahman. For creation of the universe, you appear as me. For its maintenance, you appear as yourself. And for the destruction, you appear as Shiva. So, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur concludes, this is the conception of the ignorant. Which is the conception of the ignorant? Now he says, though you are without form, again, Brahman, you take a form to appear in the material world as Vishnu, Brahma, and Shiva. Thus, the form of Narayana, situated in the Garbhodaka ocean, and all the avatar forms are all composed of Maya. That's how the ignorant thinks, basically. That's the point. Your expansions as the calves, boys, and four-handed forms of Vishnu are all Maya. Because that's the philosophy of Advaita Vedanta. Everything is Maya, except for Brahman. Brahma Satya Jagat Mitya, they say. Only Brahman is real, everything else is false. Calves, cowherd boys, Sarup Shakti, form of Bhagavan. I mean, name it. Whatever you want to say, except for Brahman, is Maya. Of course, that's a complex philosophy, complex even to justify, but that's not today's topic either, because if they say, okay, if Brahman is the only thing, but they speak so much about Maya also. So, if only Brahman is real, then Maya is something else, because you speak so much about Maya covering everything, covering, even they say covering Brahman, because of course their conclusion is, we are Brahman. And if I ask them, but why we are, I mean, if I am Brahman, if I am the Absolute, why I'm not aware of that? Because of Maya, they say. So you are Brahman covered by Maya. So that's a problem. Maya covering Brahman, the Absolute. And also, if only Brahman exists, if real, how Maya, where Maya is coming from, if only Brahman exists? And not only how come Maya exists apart from Brahman, but it's covering Brahman. So that's a very convoluted philosophy. That's not today's topic to smash it. Our chair have done it a lot in detail. But here Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur is pointing to that audience in explaining this particular verse. So that will be another interpretation of this verse. No? In the beginning we said some people may be ignorant of the fact that Krishna is God and may mistake him for an ordinary human being. That doesn't mean that they are followers of Advaita Vedanta. No? It can be someone who just doesn't have proper knowledge of who Krishna is, doesn't have enough Sambandha Gyan. But according to Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur's words, this verse could be interpreted, this Ajanatam, as referring to those who consider the form of Bhagavan as illusory. But even who interestingly many times glorify the form of Bhagavan in many verses. For example, Shankaracharya. Of course, Shankaracharya is Mahadev, and we have our own way of explaining why he said what he said. But he composed a lot of prayers to Govinda, to Krishna. Govinda Astakam, Bhaja Govinda, and many that he glorifies the form of Krishna in Vrindavan, and he said that his hope is to spend his last days at the banks of the Jamuna, hear the flute. But at the same time, he's saying that form is illusory ultimately. Or one very famous example of someone who is an Advaita Vedantin, but you read what he says about Krishna, and he seems like this is such a devotee. Madhusudan Saraswati. Our Guru Maharaj quotes him in his commentary to the Bhagavad Gita. Interesting. So he has lots of commentaries which seem really devotional. So in one context, he glorifies bhakti, glorifies Krishna, his form, embraces bhakti, but all that as a means to ultimately attain undifferentiated Brahman. So he resorts to all the things as resources that will help him to get closer to the realization of non-dual Brahman. So somehow they use bhakti and eventually they reject it as temporary. And they may be even worshipping the form of Krishna. I remember before officially joining the devotees, I was invited to one temple in Argentina. This was in some temple that basically they follow Advaita Vedanta. And we were invited to play some, to play some Indian classical music there. I was studying with some other people and they were doing their program, if you will, and the program was, I mean, again, at that time I haven't been in the temple, but then when I went to temple, I was like, this is the same that I saw in the other place. No? They have their puja, they have the deity of Radha and Krishna. So you may think, wow, they are super devoted. But when you start to inquire in detail, you realize for them, that's only like a temporary thing that will help them to realize the no form, no qualities, qualityless, nirgun, Brahman. So, again, I'm not saying this to demonize anyone, just to mention this particular point. And for us also, there is place to attain that realization eternally. We are not attracted by that, as we mentioned the other day. And the way you can attain that is by respecting and acknowledging Krishna's form is eternal, but I'm attracted to the formless Brahman. But when you say Krishna's form is unreal, then you are committing aparad to bhakti, and then you cannot attain even Brahman. So those who can attain Brahman are those who respect bhakti, do not offend it, do not consider Krishna's form as illusory, but just by certain samskars are attracted in that in this other direction. But those who say only Brahman is real and everything else is a lie, which are a few number of them, according to our perspective, they won't be able to attain that, because for their jnana, the practice of jnana to bear the fruit of sayuja mukti, they need the assistance of bhakti. Every other practice, yoga, karma, jnana, needs some admixture with bhakti to bear fruit. So if you offend bhakti, you won't attain the fruit that bhakti can give you to attain your respective goal. So, anyhow, some words regarding today's verse, in which Brahma referred to, again, Krishna as the background, the source of the guna avatars. And the next verse, that will be the last one we will be seeing here in Bulgaria tomorrow morning. Mm-hmm. Brahma will continue elaborating on this point. In this case, he will refer to Krishna, how Krishna is the root of all lila avatars. No? In this, today's verse was referring to Krishna as the root of all guna avatars, Brahma, Vishnu, Shiva, related to the guna. Next verse, to the lila avatars, the divine descents of Bhagavan into this world for performance of different pastimes and so on. But we'll see that tomorrow. I don't know if there are any questions before concluding today.
I have a question.
Okay.
Maybe it's not exactly directly on this verse and topic, but...
If it's not too connected, I will prefer maybe tomorrow we have Q&A in the morning. In the evening, sorry. Mm-hmm. Yeah, sorry. I mean, if it's relatively connected, we can speak. But if it's not that connected, we can save it for tomorrow.
I can ask him.
Let's try. Okay, that's a good one.
My experience... With Guru Maharaj and with studying of the Shastra more in depth and knowing much more philosophy and going into this direction is very, how to say, capturing interest, at least in my case. And then when I listen to other lectures where there is no, how to say, not so much Shastra quoting, going, like scientifically studying the Shastra and connecting. It makes it difficult for me to concentrate and just to appreciate whatever they're bringing.
Mm-hmm.
So I was just wondering, is this a problem that I cannot appreciate like this and... how I can solve it eventually, because I understand that we have to appreciate bhakti in whatever form it comes, even if it's more simplified, but it could be a pure essence, let's say. But if it's not very concentrated, because we're trained very much to have to concentrate very much, because Guru Maharaj is giving so much essence in such a short, and you have really to concentrate to grasp.
Yeah, we can reply today, no problem. I would say that we should be able to appreciate every presentation of Harikatha, if that's sincere, if that's coming from an honest place, no matter how simple it may be or simplified or whatever the case. At least to have one thing is to appreciate, another thing is to feel totally inspired or called by that. Which is okay. It's not that we will be totally inspired by every single mood and style of heart, because it's not possible. We have to commit in some direction and go deeper into that. Now, that's why you have one guru, someone else has another. It's not that everyone will be inspired by exactly the same way of, and of course, we ourselves will be inspired by different things in different stages in our life as well. That can happen. In the beginning, we may require a very simple explanation of some things, because if something is too nuanced, it's like, wow. In the beginning, you need maybe black and white things. No, like this is like this, and it's not like that. And in between, no, this and this. Okay. No? Like a baby with the asking questions to the mother or father, like as sometimes we say, the baby asking, Mom, how I was born? And the mother is like, you have 3 years. I cannot explain you the whole reproductive system. So some stork brought you through the chimney. And the kid is like, wow, incredible. So that's enough for him for a few years. But after that, I mean, don't try to scientifically prove that, because that's embarrassing. You have to find a more elaborate way of telling things. So the point is, we have to respect, I mean, to be... not only say to respect different presentations, but to begin with to respect the stages in which every devotee is. Again, if they are sincerely practicing, that's to be honored. Not to be condemned or not to be... Of course, I'm not forced to... I don't have to force myself to... I don't know, to go back to a neophyte stage that I may not no longer be there for the sake of appreciation. No need of that. But I can appreciate nonetheless, no? Because you have been there before. No? So it's not that you have to go and listen all those type of things again, but it doesn't mean that that's wrong, they're in Maya, they're not so high, or things like that, because, how to say, there are many things to consider. For example, a sadhu is speaking Harikatha, and also the sadhu will speak according to the adhikar of the audience. That's a point. So, and if the audience requires something very simple, the sadhu may speak about something very simple. And you may hear that say, oh, that's very simple. And you are not appreciating the empathy, the sympathy and empathy of the sadhu connecting to the level as speaking what the person can digest, which sometimes is, how to say, you require more qualification to know how to do that than to just speak about fancy topics way above the head of many. Which, of course, sometimes is difficult to, especially if you have a mixed audience or something, to like get right to the point in every single case universally. But like what Guru Maharaj says of Srila Siddhar Maharaj, no? Like someone once wanted to kind of imitate Srila Siddhar Maharaj without bad intention, but just he was inspired and he wanted like to speak like him on that level. And of course, if you are not Srila Siddhar Maharaj, basically you cannot do that. And the devotee asked my Guru Maharaj, how does Srila Siddhar Maharaj do to speak always about such high topics? And Guru Maharaj gave an even more surprising reply. He said, actually Srila Siddhar Maharaj does not speak about high topics generally. He speaks about basic topics in the highest possible way. Which is, again, that's another way of saying, I have to appreciate that. You cannot tell, oh, Srila Siddhar Maharaj is not speaking in detail about Rasa Leela and all. I mean, he could speak about that, but he's realizing you are not qualified yet for that. So I'll speak to you about the difference between matter and spirit in the most refined possible way that you can imagine. And I will leave you like spellbound. and you will totally forget about why I'm not speaking Rasa Leela to you. Something like this. You follow. So it's in one sense, it's better to speak very highly about something basic than to speak about something very high in a basic way. That's not very becoming. Very high topic that cannot be just presented in a very gross, immature way. That requires some qualification. So yeah, we should be able... There are so many... Like, again, each devotee is in their own stage. Some devotees... in the beginning need something very basic. Some devotees in another stage need something more elaborate, philosophically speaking. Some will be more intellectually inclined than others, so that may require them, they may need some particular language to deliver the message, some packaging. And some very high devotees may not be any more concerned with many philosophy anymore either. They may just want to hear other type of topics. And again, but they are not condemning everyone else. Oh, you are not immersed in rasa and just studying Govinda Lilamrita and Krishna Bhavanamrita and just Ashtaka Liya Lila and all the nuances of them. They are not thinking like that, they understand. Most of you will need something else, another narrative. So I will say that, no, that we need to appreciate all levels of devotion, and especially if every devotee is sincere to which level they are in and they are trying to act accordingly, that's to be appreciated, of course. If you are not acting accordingly to your adhikar, that's not so. You don't have to force yourself to appreciate that. You follow? If I'm being hypocrite or I'm being called to grow and mature on some level, but I'm, as we say the other day, we may indulge in different forms of sahajism. Sahajism means like, I want to practice bhakti from comfort zone. So there are two main forms. One, I am on stage B, but I want to jump into stage F without having the qualification. But I want to rush, in the words of Srila Siddhar Maharaj, to rush where angels fear to tread. So that's a form of hypocrisy. So we shouldn't appreciate that. I mean, we should learn from that, but not appreciate like, very nice, incredible. No, you shouldn't be doing that. Another form of sahajism, I would say, is you are being called to grow and go to a certain stage, but you do not go. You want to remain into a lower stage because you are not willing to grow and mature. You are being called to grow, but you choose to remain a kindergarten practitioner. That's equally unhealthy. You become complacent. You follow? Not that example. You are already supposed to be an adult, and you say, no, Ma, I want to remain a baby forever. I don't want to take responsibility. It's so nice, like just this playing, and you change my clothes, and you pay for everything. And I should say, no, this is not healthy. You have to grow, go. So that can happen also in spiritual life. You need to change, but you are not taking the necessary steps to change. You choose to remain in a comfort zone, complacent, even in the name of humility. I'm so falling. How I can go there? So of course we shouldn't appreciate that in the sense of cheap false praise of that. That's not healthy. But we should learn from that either, what not to do. But if someone is sincerely practicing according to their level, whether it may be Kanishta, no problem. It's not bad to be Kanishta. If you are supposed to be in that stage, we should appreciate that. Say, how nice this devotee is. Is acting according to his adhikar. That's indeed should be appreciated. To begin with, someone is acting according to their eligibility, I should appreciate that to begin with. But to speak of other things. But again, that doesn't mean that I have to force myself into every single class that is going on everywhere by different people, because our association should be specific. And the more we progress, the more we feel the need of swajatya. Rupa Goswami says swajatya. You have to associate with people of a similar nature, of a similar inclination. In the beginning, one may be more like generic. And of course, we associate in a generic way with many Vaishnavas. But there's also a more type of intimate sangha, that you open your heart, you reveal your mind, you allow yourself to be influenced by certain sadhus. That has to be done in a more particular way. It cannot be done with everyone, because there are so many ways and modes and influences that if you allow all that to come, you will be like bewildered. What to do? You have to decide in one direction and go for that. So again, in the beginning, that may not be a necessity for some, but at one point that becomes necessary. How I increase my specificity in the path. And eventually you will have some inner devotional affinity, and you will feel the need, I need to associate with certain sadhus who have that affinity. So I nourish that in Sangha as well, and so on. But yeah, the principle is we should appreciate, that's for sure. Because if not, we may commit some aparad or something. So we may appreciate. If that's happening again, in the context of Siddhanta, again, I'm not saying supporting deviation. That's totally different. But appreciate if something is being done with sincerity, honesty, transparency, according to the parameters of Guru, Shastra, and Sadhu. Of course, that's to be celebrated, no matter how different it may be from what, how I do it or what inspires me. Diversity is to be celebrated if it happens in that particular perimeter. If something is going beyond that perimeter and starts to take weird forms, we may respect that from some distance and learn what not to do. But not even like become an activist about denouncing everyone's deviation and condemning and sending everyone to hell. I mean, we don't have time for that. We should be pretty engaged and serious in our own project, practice and project. Yeah. Because that can be a distraction, especially nowadays, today, social media and all that. You have always some audience with some popcorn sellers that are just, oh, let's see who, oh, he put, oh, let's, you know, oh. So we don't want to engage in that popcorn sangha, basically. Okay. So, something else before finishing? Yeah, Ramon.
So, prior to these prayers, then Brahma wasn't aware of Krishna's position, but did he know these Brahma, Vishnu, Shiva's position? Was he aware of that, or was he just so focused on his job, his role?
Right? Mm-hmm.
Was he aware of the whole scheme of things?
Mm. Yeah, he was aware, of course, of the, if you want to call it the Trinity, our Trinity, Rama, Vishnu, Shiva. Yeah, he was aware of that. In the beginning of creation, he was duly enlightened by Krishna. Remember, he met Krishna. But again, he hadn't at that point made full sense of all the dots, if you will. But he was pretty much enlightened, as we were speaking yesterday or today. I don't remember when Tarun Krishna made the question. He studied the Vedas even four times. So then you are, if you study the Vedas even a little bit, what to speak, the whole thing four times, you become aware of Brahma, Vishnu, Shiva, these functions, guna avatars. So he was pretty much aware and equipped with knowledge and practice and realization, but despite that, still Braja Lila is pretty astonishing. So that's the point. If you are a very well-equipped Brahma with lots of knowledge, if you just happen to enter Braj through midday picnic, there that may create some shaking of the structure. If he was not ready for that. No? He couldn't accommodate that. I mean, he had a whole structure information about who Krishna was, Brahma, Vishnu, everything. But what he saw at that moment was like too much. No? So, but it doesn't mean that he was totally unaware of these other realities. But the point is that now in these verses, for example, today's verse that he's quoting, this Brahma, Vishnu, Shiva, Guna, avatars, now he's kind of feeling, okay, now I'm really understanding the bigger picture and how you are the ultimate source of all this. Before that, I thought more in terms, the Guna avatars are there, Bhagavan is there, and you, Krishna, even are there. But again, Brahma at that time didn't know Krishna as Braja Krishna. He knew Krishna, a more generic version, Genesis-like version of Krishna, the beginning of creation. He appeared, spoke more formally. So that was his idea of Krishna. And he thought even, okay, Krishna is the source. That Krishna is the source of all this. But when he went to Braj, he said, that Krishna is an imposter. He cannot be the source of everything. Because I know Krishna, the source of everything, and he is like this and like that, very form. So again, he got this kind of inner conflict when he met this other Krishna. But now he has just realized, oh no, this other Krishna that I thought he was an imposter, that's the source of everything, of Narayan, and of even the other Krishnas, if you will. Because we have Mathura Krishna, Dwarka Krishna, all other Krishnas. not to speak in duality about different people, but different faces of Krishna. But Krishna in Vrindavan is the fountainhead of all the other Krishnas. So Brahma is now realizing, making full circle with that. Okay, I thought Krishna was the fountainhead of everything, but now I clarify Braja Krishna. So the Bhagavatam say Krishna is Tu Bhagavan Swayam. Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But ultimately what the Bhagavatam means is Braja Krishna is Tu Bhagavan Swayam. Not any Krishna, but that particular face. So Brahma is again realizing this in this moment and trying to express it as much as he can. Okay, so I think we can stop here, and tomorrow we have, and then the next Brahma, last class here in Bulgaria about Brahma Stut tomorrow, 8:30, Bulgarian time. And for those who are connected or are here in the evening, in the afternoon, 5 p.m., we will have a little bit earlier than usual, a Q&A, not here, but in Tarun Krishna's Yogashala, which I think is relatively close.
Same so, street, but which number?
Okay, you can ask later, no problem. But for those connected, I will be streaming live as well. Srila Gurudev ki jai, Sriman Mahaprabhu ki jai, Sri Hari Nam Sankirtan ki jai, Giriraj Maharaj ki jai, Sri Sri Jagannath Baladev Subhadra ki jai, Sri Kalsi ki jai, Granthara Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Sri Brahma Stuti ki jai, Gaur Bhakta Vrinda ki jai, Gaur Pramana.